Hello, this is Mary with the Herald and Review from Decatur, dated Friday, January 12, 2018. We will begin today's reading on the front page with an article entitled Deputies Get Take-Home Vehicles. Buffett Foundation provides funding for program for 15 years by Ryan Voiles of the Herald and Review, Dateline Decatur. Macon County Sheriff's deputies could have their own take-home vehicles as early as May, thanks to a $3.1 million 15-year program, partly, largely, by Sheriff Howard Buffett's private foundation. The foundation will also buy rifles for the deputies who have been using their personal rifles on the job. The Macon County Board approved both measures Thursday. The idea stemmed from conversations with deputies about ways to improve office morale and efficiency, Buffett said. Having a take-home vehicle allows them to clock in and immediately respond to incidents rather than driving to and from work in their personal vehicles. I think all around it's a pretty positive thing, he said. The county will pay about $1 million over the life of the 15-year program, while the foundation will cover up to $2.1 million. Three existing Chevrolet Tahoes and four Chevrolet Impalas at an approximate value of $34,150 will be traded in to offset the cost of new vehicles. New vehicles will be rolled out as existing ones near 100,000 miles, including some in the next few months. Each will be equipped with a patrol rifle, an earpiece in case of an emergency, and in-car cameras. Officers will be responsible for the equipment of the vehicle in addition to general care such as oil changes and car washes. Such programs are not unique to law enforcement in Illinois and across the country. Also in central Illinois, the Springfield Police Department provides take-home vehicles for its officers. Sheriff's Office Administrative Assistant Jonathan Butts said Macon County had a similar program in the 1980s, but it was eliminated due to costs. The office has about 16 patrol deputies on staff who would qualify for the program. Butts said that number includes several deputies who already have take-home vehicles because they are contracted to patrol in Forsyth, Blue Mound, and other neighboring municipalities. Butts said the new program requirements are similar to the existing contracts, which require the deputies to take care of the vehicle. Butts and Buffett said another hope is that the marked vehicles will increase visibility of the sheriff's office in the community. Maintenance costs are also expected to be lowered under the program. Whereas now one vehicle could be operated by five or six officers in a span of a few days, Buffett said having a dedicated officer to a vehicle would alleviate the stress of moving equipment each shift and give deputies more responsibility to care for their vehicles. This also means the sheriff's office will no longer approach the county board every year with a proposal to buy new vehicles. It creates sustainability for a long time, Butts said, which is something that will help the future sheriff, the county board, and the taxpayers not to have to worry about asking for more money to purchase vehicles. Butts, a Democrat, is running for sheriff in the November election. The other two candidates are also top administrators for the sheriff's office, Lieutenant Tony Brown, a Democrat, and Lieutenant Jim Root, a Republican. The Buffett Foundation will also purchase six patrol rifles and accessories at a total cost of $14,430. Deputies could use rifles when responding to shooting incidents, including at a school, or when suspects have barricaded themselves at a scene. They are not intended to replace the shotguns that are now in every patrol vehicle and used primarily to kill injured deer. This is an effort to get more consistent, so if there is an emergency, the rifles are available, Buffett said. Buffett, who has volunteered for the office since 2012, was named to the job in September by retiring Sheriff Thomas Schneider, but his financial support of local law enforcement dates back years. In 2017 alone, donations have included, in May, $350,000 for new training firearms, vehicles, and other items. In October, nearly $100,000 for bulletproof vests, beds for the Macon County Jail, more hours for a records clerk, and a new Chevrolet Impala for civil process purposes. Also in October, in-kind donations totaling $236,000 for consultants to assess the jail. And in November, $180,000 for a new Macon County prosecutor who will focus solely on opioid cases. Continuing on page 1 with an article entitled Program Expands AP Classes for Central A&M Students First to Try Online Instructions by Tom Lisi, Herald and Review, Dateline Moequa. Four Central A&M High School students are participating in a virtual advanced placement class this semester. It's a state pilot program with 10 school districts that education officials will study to see if the program could make the college-level courses available to rural high schools that traditionally have had few or none in the past. Rural kids need opportunities. They need to be on an even playing field, said Bobby Mattingly, Regional Office of Education Superintendent for Clark, Coles, Cumberland, Douglas, Edgar, Moultrie, and Shelby counties. The program was formally unveiled Thursday at Central A&M by Lieutenant Governor Evelyn Sanguinetti, who heads the Governor's Rural Affairs Advisory Council. Sanguinetti said that Council has allocated funds to cover half the $225 per pupil cost of the virtual class for 75 students statewide. The other half is covered by participating districts. We were told in the Rural Affairs Council that rural districts are underserved, and this is doing something about it, Sanguinetti said. AP classes are designed to prepare students for an exam on that class's subject in May, administered by the College Board, the national testing organization that also oversees the SAT and ACT tests. The tests typically are made up of more advanced subject matter than what's offered in a typical high school curricula, and many universities offer college credit for them. But they're far more common in urban school districts, where bigger schools and available funding make more class choices possible. The Decatur School District was the only district in the metro area where at least 30% of high school seniors had taken an AP class by the time they graduated, according to College Board data from 2015. The May exams are scored on a scale of 1 to 5. Scores 3 and above are accepted by Illinois undergraduate programs by law as college credit. The pilot project through the governor's office will not cover the $94 cost to take the exam. There's a lot of research offering AP classes virtually, and one of the major pieces missing from much of the research is how effective is it versus face-to-face teaching, Mattingly said. The virtual class is through Illinois Virtual School, an internet-based education program run by the Illinois State Board of Education. Some 6,000 high school students in Illinois are currently taking at least one virtual class through IVS, according to Jennifer Kohler-Burden, the program's coordinator of curriculum. Given the astronomical rise of college tuition, Sanguinetti said students in rural districts are missing out on an opportunity to have completed college credits out of high school that can count toward their degree if they successfully complete a class. Central A&M's principal, Dr. Charles Brown, said he offered the opportunity to 10 students in each grade who were serious students and selected 4 randomly, seniors Laura Beckett, Riley Black, Kaylee Nitifer, and junior Elena Morse. These are 4 of our best, Brown said. Online-based classes in higher education have exploded in the past decade, but they are less common at the high school level. Of the 4 Central A&M AP students, only Nitifer had taken a class online before, which was Spanish. It was definitely more difficult, I think, having it online versus in person, she said. You had to do multiple lessons every day to keep up with it, but it was pretty fun and everything. They had exercises to help out. Continuing now with local and state news from page A3 with an article entitled Homeless Count Helps County by Claire Hettinger of the Herald and Review, Dateline Decatur. An annual count of the homeless helps social service agencies and the federal government track social service needs in Macon County. Mary Garrison, who is a professor of social work at Millikan University, will coordinate the annual point-in-time survey in Macon County, which will be 12:01 a.m. to 11:59 p.m. January 25th. Anyone interested in volunteering can contact Garrison at mgarrison@millikan.edu. That's M as in Mary, Garrison, G-A-R-R-I-S-O-N, @millikan.edu. The count is mandated by the U.S. Department of Housing and Urban Development and performed by volunteers with Homeward Bound and Dove, Inc. The information is reported to HUD, but the local community uses it as well, Garrison said. The count is performed in the winter because more people are living in shelters due to cold weather, so it is easier to track them, Garrison said. Typically, we don't find a lot of people on the street, deathly cold. That allows us to get our numbers and really know, she said. The count helps provide accurate information for the services needed in the community. Whether it be veterans, children, men, or women, the survey helps with specific numbers for each population. Volunteers set up in different areas around the community to fill out surveys and ask people about their living situation. The main question is asking someone where they slept the night before. People who slept in shelters or on the street are considered homeless. There is a group dedicated to Decatur, and Homeward Bound will cover the county, she said. Garrison, a member of the Macon County Homeless Council Continuum of Care Governing Board, said the count aids resource allocation and planning. In 2017, the count showed 130 homeless people, and in 2016, there were 157. Before this, there was an increase from 2013 to 2015, with the population reaching 255 homeless people in 2014. One of the results of the study was a Continuum of Care Homeless Action Team to specifically look at chronic homelessness, those people who have lived on the streets for a long time. The count gives the community an idea of how the efforts of social service agencies are working, said Jeff Mueller, director of Oasis Day Center. Those numbers will reflect what we do and how we do it, and what services do we need to offer, what we are doing well at, and what we are missing. The counting process also helps build a relationship with the homeless community, Mueller said. It's a golden opportunity to meet with people one-on-one. It isn't the purpose of the count, but it is an opportunity to refer them places and give the ideas of where they can go. The results of the survey help give a clearer picture of areas of services that are missing from the community, Mueller said. We have to remain passionate about trying to meet their needs. The results of the count will be reported at the Continuum of Care breakfast on March 22nd. Also in local and state news, an article entitled Police, Man Arrested for Allowing Dog to Freeze by Tony Reed of the Herald and Review. Dateline Decatur. A 23-year-old Decatur man was arrested Wednesday afternoon and booked on a preliminary charge of animal cruelty after police said he allowed a pet dog to freeze to death and then tried to cover up the incident. Macon County Animal Control officers were called Tuesday afternoon to a backyard in the 600 block of South Martin Luther King Jr. Drive, where they said they found a female pit bull that had frozen to death. In a statement, officers said they determined the dog had died 2 weeks earlier, and they established the dog did not belong to the family in whose yard it was found. That family called police after finding the dog, which was dead inside a doghouse, sheriff's deputies said. It was determined that the suspect had dragged the doghouse containing the deceased dog through the snow from the backyard of his home on South Jackson Street and had placed it in the complainant's backyard on South Martin Luther King Jr. Drive, in an attempt to dispose of it, Sergeant M.T. Reynolds said in the statement. The suspect is free on bond, but Reynolds said the investigation was continuing. Preliminary charges are subject to review by the state's attorney's office. Animal cruelty is a Class A misdemeanor, but a second or subsequent conviction is a Class 4 felony. Reynolds said the Macon County Animal Control and Care Center encourages reporting all neglect and animal abuse. Call 217-425-4508 between 8 and 5 p.m. weekdays or 217-424-1311 after hours and weekends. Also in local and state news, an article entitled, Decatur Man Faces Up to 60 Years for Shooting, by Tony Reed of the Herald and Review, Dateline Decatur. After an earlier mistrial, Gavarius T. Carney was convicted Thursday by a Macon County jury of shooting another man and now faces the prospect of up to 60 years behind bars. The 25-year-old Decatur man was found guilty after a 3-day trial of being an armed habitual criminal and aggravated battery with a firearm, both Class X felonies. Prosecutors said Carney unleashed a spray of bullets against a rival he wanted to scare away from a love interest during an incident May 28th in the 3000 block of North Portage Place. Prosecutors said Carney fired 7 or 8 shots after methodically clearing a bullet jam before shooting the male victim in the left thigh. He suffered a serious wound but recovered to testify against Carney. Before the trial, Carney had been offered a deal that would have seen him get 15 years in prison if he pleaded guilty to a charge of aggravated discharge of a firearm. Carney rejected the offer and was warned by Judge Jeffrey Geisler that both Class X felonies carried maximum 30-year prison sentences. The judge said he had the discretion to order the sentences to be served consecutively, adding up to 60 years behind bars. The jury, which took 4 hours to reach its verdict, was told Carney qualified for the armed habitual criminal charge because he had previous convictions for residential burglary and burglary. His first trial was abandoned December 4th before an earlier jury got to hear a word after defense attorney Thomas Wheeler told prosecutors he had an alibi witness. That turned out to be Carney's current girlfriend, who said she had picked him up from the restaurant where he worked the night of the shooting, and he had been with her. She had apparently not come forward previously. Wheeler also said that police hadn't investigated the shooting properly, and their case was full of holes. He said even the victim had failed at first to identify Carney as the shooter. But Macon County Assistant State's Attorney David Perry argued any initial reluctance on the victim's part to name Carney might have been motivated by fear of being shot again. The prosecutor told the jury he praised the victim for having the courage to face his assailant in court. "You might imagine how difficult it is to face down the person who shot you, who tried repeatedly to shoot you," Perry added. Carney is due to be sentenced on March 5th. Cape Air to start Decatur service in February by Jalen Cook of the Herald and Review. Dateline Decatur. Cape Air will start service at Decatur Airport on February 14th, and passengers are now able to reserve tickets for year-round flights to Chicago and St. Louis, the company announced Thursday. Fares to St. Louis-Lambert International Airport will start from $29 each way, and fares to Chicago will start from $59 each way. Cape Air was selected as the next air service provider for Decatur Airport by the Department of Transportation on December 21st. Utah-based SkyWest filed a petition Tuesday asking that the Department of Transportation to reconsider its decision to award the contract to Cape Air. Unless the federal department changes its decision, the petition will not stop Cape Air from starting service in Decatur, according to Airport Director Tim Wright. From the editorial page, Thumbs Up, Thumbs Down by the Herald and Review editorial board. Thumbs up. To a high school rivalry taking a backseat to making life a little easier for a family dealing with bills related to a child's illness, St. Teresa and Central A&M fans raised nearly $4,000 during a basketball game and donated it to Angela Bean, a St. Teresa sophomore undergoing a complex surgery next week in Chicago to treat pseudopapillary tumors on both her liver and pancreas. The atmosphere was electric as fans on both sides cheered Angela from the stands. Despite the score, everyone who contributed went home that night a winner. Thumbs up. To the work done by the many crews called into action as a result of the winter blast that hit the area last week, and for the work they will do during the rest of the cold months. Waking up to very little water pressure in your home isn't fun, but it sure beats standing in a hole filled with water trying to fix a busted water pipe in sub-zero temperatures. And while the cab of the truck clearing ice and snow covered roads at 4 a.m. might be warm, it would be much better being at home in a warm bed. Thank you. Thumbs up to remaining positive amid all the changes taking place around us and looking for solutions to the things that need fixed rather than just complaining about them. Ryan McCrady highlighted some of the things the community has going for it during the Greater Decatur Chamber of Commerce Business Breakfast last week. They included an available workforce, transportation infrastructure, and quality of life. We have the foundation. Let's just build on it. Thumbs up. To attention finally being directed at awful Legionnaires outbreak at the Illinois Veterans Home in Quincy. It's far too late for this case to be getting the focus it is now. 13 residents and dozens of residents have become ill since 2015. We are eager to see aggressive steps taken to address this. Thumbs down to the expenses related to the Eisenhower High School athletic field. The school district got the go-ahead to sue the subcontractor, whose work is being called into question because of some drainage and turf issues. Ideally, both sides could have agreed on a fix without involving the legal system and the costs associated with that avenue. But we commend the school board for taking the necessary steps to get the situation remedied. Thumbs down to the flu. It seems every other person around the holidays has been ill. Both Decatur hospitals told the Herald and Review there's been a sharp increase in patients. Wash your hands, stay home when you're ill, stay safe. Thumbs up to taking an already great recipe and making it better. It's great that Decatur is now home to the Macon County Law Enforcement Training Center and the people it will bring to the community. But using the center as a training ground for culinary students at Richland Community College by having them provide the food to the law enforcement personnel who are there is just icing on the cake. And now the obituaries for Friday, January 12, 2018. Harned, Decatur. Donald James Harned, 86, previously of Decatur, died in Tampa, Florida at St. Joseph's Hospital with his family at his side. Funeral services will be at 11 a.m. Saturday, January 13, 2018, at Graceland Fairlawn Funeral Home. Visitation will be held from 10 a.m. to 11 a.m. at the funeral home prior to the service. Burial will be in Graceland Fairlawn Cemetery, Decatur. Don's grandson, John Scheller, will be officiating. Johnston, Shelbyville. Charlie R. Johnston, 72, of Shelbyville, Illinois, died at 12:35 p.m. Wednesday, January 10, 2018, in HSHS St. John's Hospital, Springfield, Illinois. Funeral services will be held at 11 a.m. Monday, January 15, 2018, in Howe and Yockey Funeral Home, Shelbyville, with Reverend Greg Breeden officiating. Visitation will be from 3 to 7 p.m. Sunday and 10 to 11 a.m. Monday. Burial will be in Glenwood Cemetery, Shelbyville. Memorials may be given to Shriners Hospitals for Children or Prune Belly Syndrome. Beeson, Decatur. Zelma Beeson, 96, of Decatur, passed away Sunday, January 7, 2018, at St. Mary's Hospital with her family by her side. Visitation services to celebrate the life of Zelma Beeson will be from 10 a.m. to 11 a.m., Tuesday, January 16, 2018, at Graceland Fairlawn Funeral Home. Burial will be in Graceland Cemetery. Memorials may be directed to Alzheimer's Association Illinois Chapter, 8430 West Bryn Mawr, Suite 800, Chicago, Illinois, 60631. Geisert, Mount Zion. Pauline Geisert, age 100, of Mount Zion, formerly of Breeze, died Tuesday, January 9, 2018, at Decatur Memorial Hospital in Decatur, Illinois. She was born August 17, 1917, to Bernard and Mary Casson of Albers, Illinois. Private graveside services will be held on Saturday, January 13th at 11 a.m. at Elwood Cemetery in Breeze. Cole, Sullivan. Joe N. Cole, 92, of Sullivan, passed away January 10th, 2018. Funeral services will be held 11 a.m. Monday, January 15th, 2018 at McMullen Young Funeral Home, Sullivan, with Masonic rites by the George A. Sentel Lodge, number 764. Visitation will be held an hour prior to the service at the funeral home. Burial will be in Marrowbone Township Cemetery, Bethany. Memorials may be made to the Shriners Hospital for Children or to Mason Point Chapel. Howard, Decatur. Jelani Camore Howard, infant daughter of Arius Howard and Jasmine Mackens, passed away Thursday, December 28, 2017, in Decatur Memorial Hospital. Funeral services to celebrate the life of Jelani Camore Howard will be 11 a.m. Friday, January 12, 2018, at Graceland Fairlawn Funeral Home. Visitation will be from 10 a.m. to 11 a.m. Friday at the funeral home before the service. Burial will be in Graceland Cemetery. From Section C, Your Money, an article entitled Decatur Sam's Club, Not Among the Closing, by the Herald and Review, Dateline Decatur. The Sam's Club store indicator is not among those closing across the country, its manager said Thursday. Business Insider reported Thursday that Walmart is closing 63 Sam's Club stores. Local media outlets in multiple states reported the closures, which in some cases were so sudden that employees found out when they showed up to work. Reached by phone Thursday, Decatur store manager Ben Needham confirmed that the Decatur Sam's Club at 4334 North Prospect Drive wasn't among them. On Twitter, the company responded to queries by saying, "After a thorough review of our existing portfolio, we've decided to close a series of clubs and better align our locations with our strategy." The closures come the same day that Walmart said it would boost the starting salary for U.S. workers to $11 an hour and handing out one-time cash bonuses. The company cited tax legislation that will help it save money, but the moves also reflect the tight labor market in which employers are competing for workers. The world's largest retailer said the moves, which also include expanded parental leave benefits, will affect more than 1 million hourly workers in the U.S. Employees previously started at $9 an hour, with a bump up to $10 after completing a training program. Its rival Target had raised its minimum hourly wage to $11 in October and said it would raise wages to $15 by the end of 2020. Tax reform gives us the opportunity to be more competitive globally and to accelerate plans for the U.S., Walmart CEO Doug McMillon said Thursday. President Donald Trump cheered the announcement with a tweet saying, "Great news as a result of our Tax Cuts and Jobs Act." Dozens of other companies have announced worker bonuses following the passage of the Republican tax plan. Large employers also have been under pressure to boost benefits for workers because unemployment rates are historic lows, allowing job seekers to be pickier. But low unemployment has meant that retailers have had trouble attracting and keeping talented workers, experts said. And there's more competition from online retailers, which typically pay warehouse employees who pack and ship orders more than stores pay. Job postings at an Amazon warehouse in Ohio, for example, offer a starting pay of $14.50 an hour. "This is about the evolution of retail," said Michael Mandel, chief economic strategist at the Progressive Policy Institute. "The rise of e-commerce is leading to higher wages." Walmart said the wage increase benefits all hourly U.S. workers at its stores, including Sam's Club. We'll take a short break now and return with the second half hour of the Herald and Review from Decatur for January 12, 2018. Please stay tuned.